This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Leading towards, eventually, first pitch between South Carolina and Florida today at the SEC tournament. Tough week weather-wise for these conference tournaments, and tough to have an issue on day one. Right, when you get the first game delayed like they've had at the SEC tournament, Alabama, Georgia, multiple rain delays, they're hoping to restart that game in about 20 minutes, that throws everything out of whack. Now, good luck trying to get all these games in. They're going to be playing until 2 a.m., and then potentially that has to lead into tomorrow, and that throws everything out of whack because you got the other games scheduled and pitchers and this and that. Anyways, it's a whole ordeal. But whenever South Carolina and Florida gets underway, we'll have it for you right here once that coverage begins from Alabama. Clemson begins their conference tournament tonight, and the Citadel will start tomorrow up in Greenville, when their game most likely will get underway at 9 a.m. over on her sister station. So stay tuned, because all this stuff is, of course, very fluid when it comes to baseball and the weather that we're dealing with in certain parts of the country here these couple of days. By the way, before we dive into anything else here on the Morrow Midday Show, you can always, if you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand, search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And also, you can always get in touch with the show online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. Leave a comment there. On Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text the show, 843-608-1734. Or you can always join the conversation on the phones as well, 843-721-9500. This is now the third time this has happened to me in the last couple of weeks where I'm having a conversation with somebody either through text or in person. And this is what Apple News sends me, a notification. I just got this notification on my Apple Watch. Apple News just sent me this article, "The Weight Loss Myth Even Doctors Believe." We were just talking about maybe not directly weight loss, but, you know, Mac Jones getting into the best shape of his life and Justin Herbert putting on pounds and quarterbacks that are getting in better shape. This has happened now about three times where Apple News, I get a notification on my phone. Apple News is sending me some sort of article that's pretty similar to something I was just talking about. Get out of here, Apple News. Listening.
Tim Cook is listening.
Yeah.
He's always listening.
That's right. There was a commercial back in the day that I think it was Tim Lewis. Tim Lewis is watching. Was such a creep. No, Tim Lewis. We were just talking about Tim Lewis, right? Was that the name? There was somebody. There was a commercial back in the day, old school commercial. You probably don't remember it. It was like an old electronics store. And the jingle was, whatever their name was watching. And it was such a creepy, it was such a weird jingle or slogan to have. I'm going to have to look that up and get back to that. But anyways, Mac Jones, though, Mac Jones said he believes he's in the best shape of his life, which probably is fair because he's, what, like 22? That's what probably when you should be. Wait till you get to, you know, for me, it was about when I turned 27, the metabolism slowed down, and I started packing on the pounds. And realize, like, oh, shoot, now I actually have to start exercising for once. Trent, do you feel like you are currently in the best shape of your life, or was that at another point?
Probably another point, yeah. There was a point from, I would say, sophomore year of high school to senior year of high school where I was in very, very good shape. Because doing sports, you know, you got to do football, and then, boom, you're right into track season, and you know track season. So, like, you bulk up during the football season, and then you go to track, and you just run it all off. So, yeah, that was about it. You know, I hit the gym every so often, right? Not as much as I'd like to, obviously, you know, relatively busy out here. But yeah, try it. I wouldn't say I'm in the best shape of my life by any stretch of the imagination. Unfortunately, like you said, this is the time, 21, 22, 23, where you should be in your prime.
Yeah, for me, it was same thing. High school, between basketball and I was on the cross country. And then when basketball ended, and instead of going to practice after school, I'd go home and sleep on the couch. That's when that was the peak. That was the height of my athleticism, I guess, and then it's been all downhill since. And when I went from instead of running around all afternoon at basketball practice and then sleeping on the couch because my career was over before it ever even started, right, that's when things really went downhill. Now, I will say I was probably in the worst shape about a year ago, and I've gotten myself back into much better shape. So I'm up there. But it never compares to when you were younger. I talk about this with my brothers all the time because we all grew up playing AAU basketball. You used to play 4 games in a weekend. And now we talk about like these NBA athletes, how you got to have 2 days in between games and load management. You can't play. These guys are too tired. They're worn down. And we always talk about that. Like, remember back in the day, we used to play like 3 games in one day. But you would have the energy for days. You could run around all day long when you're a kid and even into high school. And then once you get into college and maybe start, you know, partying a little more and whatnot, and then into adulthood and you don't have the time to stay fit and you got to eat whatever you can while you're busy at work, right? then things go downhill.
That's why decathletes amaze me, you know, because they do a 2-day, it's over 2 days, but they do 5 events, you know, per day. And that's crazy to me to think about, like, hey, you'll high jump in here, and now you're going to go run a mile, and then you're going to do the 110-meter hurdles, go long jump, and then you're going to go pole vault, and the next day, you know, do 5 more events similar to that, all in a 2-3-hour window. It's insane.
It is. Same with, like, just running a marathon or a half marathon.
Yeah.
Like, I run just about every day, and believe you me, I could never get close. I couldn't imagine doing even a half marathon. I'll do a couple miles and feel like really proud and worn out and tired, and I have to go take a nap. I couldn't imagine running for like 5 hours straight. That sounds brutal. So anyways, props to people that do those things. I instead sit on the couch in my socks and watch sports. And Mac Jones, credit to him for saying he's like in the best shape of his life. Good for him. Like when you go to the NFL and you work with these training staffs and everything, it's also a little bit easier than your regular person. That's part of the job too, is to be in good shape. So it's a little bit different. You're working an office job, a little bit harder to stay in great shape. You got a lot of other priorities. For him, it's part of the gig. And he's got a staff working with him there in New England, the best of the best. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Billy is with us. Billy, what's going on? How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Luke?
Good.
A couple of questions. And first of all, yeah, I think after 25, that's when it started going on that downhill for me.
Yeah.
I think 25 is prime, and after that, it just goes by quicker.
Yep, I'm with you.
The question I got with you was the baseball season, the way it's turned out for South Carolina. Say they lose today, do you think Marquise Stone's gone, or do you think they're going to keep him in another year?
No, I think it's too hard to keep. And look, I'm never one to root for somebody to lose their job, but based off of what he's done, especially if they lose today, I think that's a hard sell to tell your fan base he's coming back for next year after the way things especially went this year, but really throughout his tenure.
Yeah, because I feel like he's between Holdsworth and then him. I think they've pretty dismantled whatever Ray Tanner built, and I don't want that to come back and haunt Ray Tanner later for doing the hiring that he has. I mean, this has been going downhill every single year since Tanner left.
Yeah, and the irony, though, is, right, that Tanner's the one putting these guys in this position, so he's kind of doing himself is ruining what he built there, that program.
And what do you think the chances would be? I know it's probably slim to none, but do you think they could ever talk Tanner into coming back for a couple of years until he found somebody else, or you don't think he would?
I don't think so. Look, you may get some sort of situation. I don't think it would happen, but like I'm drawing a blank now on his name. The football coach at Wisconsin, Barry Alvarez, right? Like, he would step in for like a year, or he'd coach like the bowl game just as a holdover. I could see a situation like that, but I don't think Ray Tanner would go back into the dugout, you know, full time. They could probably use him at this point, but I think he's moved on from that part.
Now, one more thing, I'll let you get an NBA question. Who do you think is going to be in the finals?
Well, certainly the Warriors, right? I don't think they blow that series. And then I still like the Celtics in that series with Miami, but the way they've alternated wins, I don't know. Maybe the Heat will win Game 7 at home. One of these teams is finally going to have to win back-to-back games, but I think the Celtics are the better team.
All right, I'll talk to you all later. Bye.
I appreciate it, Billy. Yeah, I still – look, it was my pick before the series, and I'm sticking with it. The Celtics and the Warriors. The Warriors, that's a safe bet at this point. The Celtics, Heat, I don't know. Again, neither team's won back. They keep trading off blowouts. So if this trend continues, the Heat will win Game 7 in a blowout in advance. I think finally the Celtics will finally find a way either in Game 5 or Game 7 to win back-to-back games to help them put this thing away, but we shall see. In regards to Kingston with South Carolina, in the last 50 years, South Carolina baseball has had three seasons in which they did not win 30 games. Take out the COVID year because that doesn't count. They did not play a full season. They played 16 games. But over the last 50 years, when South Carolina has played a full baseball season, only three times in those 50 years did they fail to win 30 games. That's quite the accomplishment. I don't know how many other schools could say that. All right, that's pretty good to have a winning record, essentially, right? All but 3 years in the last 50? Now, here's the problem. Of those three times when they failed to win 30 games, two of those three times have happened under Mark Kingston's watch. In 2019 and this year as well. And obviously 2020 was the shortened season with the pandemic, so you could say that, but, you know, of course, yeah, you give them the benefit of the doubt because that was a shortened season. But they've had two, record-wise, two of their three worst seasons over the last 50 years have come in the last 4 years under Mark Kingston. Additionally, when you look at, like, the conference record, you know, conference record, when you play in a conference like the SEC, that's always more important. That's more telling because you play down in competition out of conference. So when you look at the conference record, sure, his overall record's not bad at South Carolina, 30 games over 500. But when you look at his SEC record, two losing seasons, two winning seasons, but his best winning season was four games over 500. That's the best they've done in the SEC. They've never finished higher than third in their division. And overall, he's 12 games under 500 in the SEC. Also has been lousy in the SEC tournament, although the Gamecocks haven't been great in the SEC tournament the last about 15 years. And he needs to do something. You got to try to win a couple of games here. But I think that's a hard sell for the Gamecocks to sell to their fan base that you're bringing Kingston back. I mean, it was a decade ago. You're winning national championships. Now you're struggling just to be over 500 in the SEC. You're failing to win 30 games, which was always a given for South Carolina for the last half century. Three times last 50 years. Two of those three times the last 4 years. That's not a good trend. And I will say that I remember years ago I was being tough on Ray Tanner, and I got a lot of pushback from Gamecock fans. In fact, when I would meet some people in public, they would say, well, you're the guy that always gives Ray Tanner a hard time. And now I see a lot of people starting to come around and realize that some of these moves have not been great. Ray Tanner was a great coach. More concerns, though, about the decisions as an AD. And Kingston at South Florida had a losing record in the AAC as the head coach of South Florida when he got hired for the Gamecocks. So that was already a bit of a red flag. Things have not been great with South Carolina, and the standards, expectations should all be higher for South Carolina than, you know, a 500 season this year. Under 500 in the SEC. If they lose today, they'll be right under 500 for the year overall. That's obviously not good enough. And the irony, as alluded to there with Billy, is right that Ray Tanner, like, you know, really had this program humming. And then now, because of the decisions made, it's like the AD is actually undoing a lot of that work. So it's not like somebody else came along and ruined his piece of art. Like, I mean, he's, as the AD, is kind of doing it. Now, Ray has been complimentary of my work. So at the same time, I have also become a huge Ray Tanner fan. And Ray, I got your back. Next head coach is going to be the best one yet for the Gamecocks. But for South Carolina, you had to move on from Muschamp. You just moved on from Frank Martin. Now you may move on from Mark Kingston. Right? Not great. And that's also a lot of times, it's like a GM at the professional sports level that does not want to move on from the quarterback that quick because they don't want to admit when they were wrong. And if you're an athletic director, it can be hard. You fire the football coach, and then a year later you fire the basketball coach, and then months later you fire the baseball coach. That's a lot of change. And potentially, depending on their contracts, could be a lot of buyouts, and then you bring in a new staff, could be expensive. So not only are they admitting mistakes, but they could be costly mistakes depending on contracts. I don't know what the contracts are. I mean, we know Muschamp was what, like $15 million was the buyout? I don't know about Frank. I don't know what Mark Kingston is. I don't even know what his contract is. Maybe his contract's up at the end of the year for all I know. I'm not sure. But that's the other part of it too, is that some of these could be costly mistakes as well. And so a lot of times ADs don't want to fire a bunch of coaches in a small window because, A, it makes them look really bad if they were the ones that made those hires and now they're firing all the same guys at once. And then, B, it could just be costly for the buyouts. In the NFL, you change a coach, right? You only have one coach. College program, you got a bunch of coaches. And if you're going to change three in about 18 months, you could be paying a lot to make those changes. Plus, it's an admission of like, yep, I really failed at all of the hires, which is not good. Just like a GM in the NFL, right, they may hold on to that quarterback they drafted in the first round a little bit longer because they don't want to admit like, yep, I really screwed up the first round pick. That was on me. It's a bad look for me. I did a bad job, right? A lot of times GMs are stubborn because they don't want to admit such a thing. ADs can be stubborn because they don't want to admit, yep, I screwed up. I hired the wrong guy. And it just so happens, you know, football, basketball, baseball, we all have to make a change in about 18 months. Not a great look for athletic programs. With that said, Ray, go get him, buddy. He's been complimentary in my work, so right back at you, Ray. Great baseball coach. As an AD, things have been a little lacking of late. We'll see about Mark Kingston and his future. But certainly, he could use some wins this week. And the Gamecocks have not been great in the SEC tournament. Coming up, as we wait for Gamecock baseball, for the coverage to begin at some point this afternoon, I'll be honest with you, I'll be frank, we're somewhat filibustering throughout the afternoon. But when we come back, there's this great anecdote about Phil Mickelson, and we have to get to that. I want to make sure we bring this up on air, and we'll do it next. It's the Moore Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio, leading into Gamecock coverage, although looks like coverage for South Carolina, Florida won't begin until 4 p.m. now at this point. So I won't be with you until 4, but we will have you covered here on ESPN Radio leading up until the eventual start of South Carolina baseball today with Florida. Speaking of which, we were talking about Mark Kingston last segment. Somebody on the text line, you can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Texter said, who are candidates to replace Mark Kingston, if and when we get to that point? I know a lot of Gamecock fans have been talking about Cliff Godwin. I think that's pie in the sky. He's the head coach at East Carolina, and he's done a really good job over there, a fantastic job. But that's his alma mater, and he's also turned down other overtures, opportunities to go to bigger schools in past years. I think he's fine where he is, and if he is going to leave, I don't know if it's South Carolina. Now, he's a North Carolina guy, right, so it's still kind of close to home, and it is the SEC, and there is a history and a tradition at South Carolina, but he's turned down some big opportunities. He's been an assistant in the SEC for a number of years previously, but he's at his alma mater. He's having success. I'm sure eventually he's going to leave. I don't think that's the end game for him, and he's only 44 years old, but I know a lot of Gamecock fans are talking about him. I don't know if he leaves just yet. Probably reached his ceiling or pretty close to at East Carolina, but I mean, he's having a lot of success there and could continue to do so, and that's his alma mater. Just like it's hard to fire a coach from their alma mater, I'm sure it's hard for coaches to leave too. It's a different situation, but like Juwan Howard just turned down the Lakers, really wanted to hire him, and he said, no, I'm going to stay at Michigan. Now, it's a little bit different because his kids are at Michigan, so that's more of the reason. He's got two sons he's going to be coaching, more of the reason to stay there. But same idea, like that's his alma mater. That's the school you dream. When you become a coach, you dream about coaching at the alma mater, not necessarily in the SEC or wherever else. In this case, the NBA for Juwan Howard. Like you could go coach LeBron and the Lakers, biggest brand. And he said, no, I'm good at Michigan. I'm going to stay here. And part of that is because his kids are there, but also alma mater. That's a powerful thing. So all that's to say, Cliff Godwin is a name I see thrown around a lot. Coach at East Carolina. I wouldn't assume he's interested in leaving. The more maybe obvious one would be Landon Powell, right? Seems like a great option. Played for the Gamecocks, played in the big leagues, is a catcher. A lot of good baseball managers in the big leagues, right? Most of them are catchers. Catcher is the smartest guy on the field. They're doing more than anybody. And now he's coaching up the road at North Greenville, and he's doing an incredible job. He's been there since 2014. Have you looked up what North Greenville's done? In his first year, they were 8-35. Now, it's Division II. It's not the SEC, yada, yada, yada. But year one, 8-35. By year two, North Greenville had a winning record. And then by year three, they really took off, right? 35-16, and then 38 and 15, and then 46 and 10. And then in 2019, they went 45 and 11. 2020 was obviously a shortened season. Still, they were, I think, 19 and 5. 34 and 13 last year. This year, they are 48 and 9. I mean, they're a powerhouse. He's turned them into a powerhouse. They won 8 games his first year. By year 2, winning record. By year 3, great record. And they've had a great record every year since. 48 and 9 this year. And played for South Carolina, is coaching in the area, played in the big leagues, is a catcher, has had a lot of success in the Division II level. They're in the regional against Columbus State this weekend. So he checks a lot of the boxes. So I think that's the obvious one would be Landon Powell, former Gamecock. And I go back to what I just said about the alma mater. For him, it'd be a chance for him to come back to his alma mater, and that's always a huge draw for anybody. Why you're willing to donate to the school, right? As if you didn't pay enough to go to college. They always hit you up for donations, and you're always willing to. We all have that connection to the school you went to, the alma mater. And so that seems like it could be a good fit. But, of course, a decision would have to be made first, and we'll see if we get to that here this offseason. And before that, we'll see what the Gamecocks are able to accomplish, if anything, this week in Alabama, starting with Florida coming up later on today. Georgia and Alabama, the first game of the conference tournament, had a couple of different rain delays. They're starting up back again in about the third inning, and then South Carolina will play after that game. Hey, by the way, a reminder, of course, we have the summer golf tour continuing for the next couple of months. Every Monday, a new foursome goes on sale for just $98.9 at a different golf course and at one of the many great golf courses in the area. And the foursomes sell out incredibly quick. The first week of the summer golf tour this year, they sold out within 8 minutes. Second week this past week, wasn't much longer. So set your calendars, set the alarms, write it in the calendar, whatever you got to do. Next Monday, 8 a.m., the next round of foursomes goes on sale. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com to get yours while you can before they sell out. Next Monday, 8 a.m., charlestonsportsradio.com for week 3 of our 2022 summer golf tour here as part of ESPN Radio. And I'll use that as a segue to this little anecdote. We've been hearing a lot more about Phil Mickelson lately, and some of the maybe secrets are being exposed. That sounds more dramatic than it probably is, right? But we're getting some of the dirt on Phil here in recent weeks. And a lot of it is around his love for sports gambling. Right? Maybe that's the root of why Phil is so ticked at the PGA Tour, or wants to go for the Saudi Arabian back tour to make more money. Because we've had the reports that he lost, what was it, $40 million in gambling on sports? Now, here's another anecdote that came out. This is from about 20 years ago, early 2000s. And this is from the tale. Who's telling this? This is Steve Flesch was paired with Mickelson on a Sunday afternoon at one of the events. And he said every hole, Phil was checking a beeper. He could not have cared any less about what we were doing on the golf course. He was definitely more concerned about who was winning the football games and who was covering the spread. Tom Lehman said he had a similar experience with Mickelson at the President's Cup in 2000. He was paired with Phil on a Saturday, and he said Phil was hitting it everywhere. He barely finished a hole through the first 8 holes. He keeps saying, "Don't worry, I'll show up eventually." On the 9th hole, he buries it in the front bunker and is out of the hole again. He walks way back into the trees and is sitting on a stump with his back to everybody and his head down. I think he's giving himself a pep talk, so I go over there to try to make him feel better, and he's got his phone out and he's checking football scores. In February 2001, Mickelson cashed a $560,000 Super Bowl ticket as he plunked down $20,000 on the Ravens. Yeah, that's the famous bet that Mickelson nailed the Super Bowl months before. When the Ravens, with that great defense, won, he bet $20,000 on them to win the Super Bowl. They did, and it turned into almost $600,000 for Phil. But also later on, let me see here. I'm reading this, which never makes for great radio. Mickelson was so invested in the Ravens' run that year that the AFC Championship game fell on Saturday of the Tournament of Champions. Mickelson listened to the game during the round with an earpiece and a radio hidden in his clothes. Later in 2001, when the tour visited Firestone, Mickelson was lounging in the locker room watching the playoff, Tiger Woods, Jim Furyk playoff. Mickelson barked out he would bet $20 on Furyk holding the shot at 25-1. Mike Weir took the wager and then had to pay Mickelson $500 when Furyk did, in fact, jar it. So on and so forth. A lot more stories. But I love that idea of Mickelson 20 years ago not caring what's going on in the course. And instead, he's either got a beeper where people are like sending him the scores of the game so he could check how his bets are doing while he's golfing. Or he goes into the woods to be checking scores on a cell phone way back when. I don't know if they had that capability 20 years ago. He must have been on the phone with somebody. Or he's got a secret earpiece, they said, 20 years ago, so he could listen to the Ravens since he had $20,000 on them winning the Super Bowl. Obviously, not giving his undivided attention to his job or what he was supposed to be doing on the golf course. Probably relatable to a lot of people, paying more attention to the bets than whatever else they're supposed to be doing and how encompassing it can become. But Phil Mickelson loves his sports betting. Now, I remember, this is not going back 20 years ago, but I remember when I first got a cell phone, and I was late to the party. All my buddies had a cell phone. I didn't get a cell phone until I was in high school because I'm old enough that I grew up without cell phones. Cell phones started to become all the rage. I got one finally when I was in high school. And I remember way back when, this was before smartphones. There was such a world that existed when you didn't have an iPhone. I had my little flip phone. It was a piece of crap. But there was a number. I think it was 4-INFO was the number. 4, and then you type in info on the keypad. And you would text them the score. And I should say you would text them a team, and they would send you back the score. And that's how, before smartphones, that's how I used to keep up with, like, the Boston Red Sox during the baseball season. I'd be at a friend's house. We'd be out, whatever. You text 4-INFO. You say Red Sox, and it sends you back. Right? Top of the sixth inning, down 3-2 against whoever. And way back when, if you remember, you did not have unlimited texts. Now, I'm one of three siblings. I have two older brothers. And so when texting first became a thing, it was all the rage. Everybody was texting. I mean, we still are today. All you do is text all day. But back then, it was new. It was cool. Wow, you could talk to one another on a cell phone. Right? That was amazing. And it was the old T9. You used to type out the words on the keyboard. Nowadays, right, it's not touchscreen. You can't touch letters. You used to have to hit the button 4 times to get a certain letter. It was such a pain. But you get a real knack for it. Anyways, there wasn't unlimited. When cell phones first, right, there wasn't unlimited data, and there wasn't unlimited text messages. And if it was unlimited, it was a lot of money to get the unlimited package. And so to think back, we had something crazy. Like, it was only like 200 texts a month for the whole family. Something absurd. And my brothers and I, of course, we'd blow through it. And my father would yell at us every month and threaten us with paying the phone bill if we kept going over the number of allotted texts. But way back when, on a throwback Tuesday, if it was, I think, after 9, right, you got free text messages after 9 o'clock. So you would have to wait till 9 to really send a lot of the texts because then it wouldn't count towards your total. So when it came to 4-INFO, to bring it back to that, when I'd be at a friend's house or we'd be out doing whatever, and we'd be curious, like, oh, what's going on in the game? Maybe it was Monday Night Football. Maybe it was the Red Sox. We were all, you know, we were Red Sox fans. Are they winning tonight? You would text 4-INFO, but you'd really have to wait until after 9 o'clock. Now, you don't want to use too many of your text messages just to get the score of one game. Especially, as you know, baseball is so slow-moving that not much changes. But you would be so anxious because you couldn't watch the game, and you were curious, like, oh, boy, did they take the lead yet? Are they still losing? What's the score? Is it the ninth inning? We got to get to a TV? You know, I was such a big baseball fan back in the day, you couldn't miss a game. And so you would have to be real, like, methodical with your text messages. You have to space them out. You don't want to use up all your texts for the month on 4-INFO to get the score of the game. And then once 9 o'clock came around, then it was free reign, right? Then you send that text every 30 seconds to get the pitch-by-pitch update when you couldn't watch the game. But Phil Mickelson, way back when, he had a pager, had a beeper, someone sending him scores. He's getting the updates on his phone 20 years ago somehow. And it just sparked my memory of way back when I first got a cell phone, before the smartphones, before you could just go on the ESPN app on your smartphone. It was 4-INFO. It was the number you would text. And whatever team, the Braves, even I'm sure they did college football, you text, you know, Clemson football, and it sends you back the update. Sends you back the score. But back then, right, you had to be real, real careful. You had to be real, real strict with your text messages because you only had a certain number. Imagine a world where you can only text 200 times a month. Now, you had to be careful when you were going to use those texts. Otherwise, you wait till 9 o'clock and then, right, free minutes, free text. You would tell people, call me, but you have to wait till after 9. Don't call me until after 9. What a world. And that wasn't that long ago. Nowadays, it's all hell has broken. You could do whatever you want in these cell phones. Call people whenever. Right? Texting. I get texts at like 1 a.m. No big deal. I'm texting people. I'm up late. You're texting at 1 a.m. Just buddies about whatever's going on. Back then, there were strict rules to the whole cell phone thing. And then the smartphones came along, and that changed everything. But anyways, Phil Mickelson loves a good sports bet. Unfortunately, as many find out, there's a reason why if you ever go to Vegas, and then you go back a couple years later, there's a reason why Vegas is always growing, and it's expanding. They're not shutting down buildings. Casinos aren't going away. They're adding on. Why? Because the house always wins. Vegas will always win. And so Phil Mickelson, like many others, unfortunately, I'm sure, finds it out the hard way. But you will more often than not come out on the bottom than on top. But the real thrill of it isn't even so much like the winning and the losing. A lot of times it's kind of just like placing the bet and the idea. And then you could be chasing that money by watching the game and you're, you know, yelling at the TV to try to get your victory. But it's a lot of it is just placing that bet. Then when you lose, you come back and you try to place another bet and think, like, that's going to be the winner. And the problem, too, while we're on the subject, now that we've gone down this path with you know, time to kill throughout the afternoon, the problem, too, as they say, with gambling addiction, and I don't want to put a label on Phil Mickelson, though it's certainly based off of some of these stories, seems like he was an addict, if he still isn't, or very into his sports gambling. What they say about gambling addiction, right, is that you can't smell it and you can't really see it. If somebody is addicted to alcohol, a lot of times you can smell it on them. If somebody's addicted to drugs, that can be very noticeable depending on the drugs they're using. Well, when someone's a sports gambler, you really, unless you're around them all hours of the day, you could have no idea. You don't know how much money they're putting down or losing or how many games they're betting. There's no smell. There could be no tell. They could play it off and you have no idea. It's not like they're losing weight or putting on weight or, you know, whatever else maybe, or you could see marks on their arms. Nothing like that. Can't smell it on them. Nothing. So that's always the issue, too, when people get too caught up in sports gambling, is that those around them may not even know.
Did you tune into when Phil Mickelson was on the Manning cast by chance? Did you see that interaction?
I don't think so.
It was interesting. Now that we're hearing all about the gambling and stuff, he went on there and immediately started asking questions about teams' offenses, their skill sets, the defenses. Now I'm connecting the dots. Like, it wasn't one of the normal Manning cast conversations where it's kind of like you're in and out. He was literally dialed in. I believe the 49ers were playing, and he was like, well, how's that running back right there? You know, has he done well this season? What's the offensive line look like? What's their defensive scheme and everything? So he's definitely still, you know,
oh, I'm sure,
all the way involved. And I also think with sports gambling, it's like, especially in this industry, it can keep you a lot more engaged in something,
yeah,
that is,
for sure,
especially like player props, you know, when you, mm-hmm, you know, bet the point total or something like that, or Luka to have 8 assists.
Yeah.
Even if it's a bad game, you'll still watch the game intently because, you know, you have a little juice riding on it.
I think that's
the, if, especially in this business, the positive to it.
That is true. It could be a positive and a negative,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then you fall into that trap of, you know, betting on those things, or hanging around for a game, or live betting in a blowout where normally you're turning off a blowout. It's a good thing for the sports, for the leagues. People are staying locked in. But then you can fall into that trap of, you know, even if a game's a blowout, you stay tuned in to get more bets in.
I mean, if you're up at 3 a.m. watching Korean baseball and betting on it, you know, then, yeah, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Like,
hey,
what are you doing?
I only did it a couple of times, all right? It's not a problem.
The Dragons were my team during,
yeah,
the pandemic. They were my team, dude.
Isn't that crazy? Think back to the pandemic. There was a time where that was the only sport going on, and ESPN was showing it on their main, you know, ESPN network. And we, at least I, like, people were into it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we actually have some sports on in that summer of 2020 when everything else was shut down. And it was Korean baseball, like 6 a.m. with guys you never heard of. And, yes, people, of course, were gambling on that as well. But, like, I was DVRing it, and I would watch it, like, later in the day because there was no other sports. We were so into Korean – some of, you know, certain portion of sports fans were so into the KBO. What a time, because there was nothing else going on when the pandemic first started, you know, about 2 years ago.
Aussie rules football. I really got into,
yeah,
Aussie rules football. Oh yeah, it is a good time. The ball is called a Sharon, so it's a pretty good time.
That's another one. You had to find other ways to try to get your sports fixed without anything going on during the pandemic. What a crazy time. So, anyways, I saw that story this morning. I thought that's pretty. Now, look, people have theorized. Phil Mickelson has had some gambling debts. Phil Mickelson has had some epic chokes.
Mm.
He's missed some putts in his day. People have theorized, you know, was Phil on the take? Was he point shaving? Was he, you know, kind of throwing some events to, because he had money on the line for his own sport? Like, Well, Pete Rose wasn't throwing games.
Allegedly.
Yeah, you're right. That's, yeah, that's fair. I mean, can we really believe what he's saying? But we've had incidents. We had Boston College point shaving way back when. Could Phil Mickelson, maybe that explains why he lost so many events or was known as a choker. He actually had some sort of money on the line, and it was all part of it.
Wow, I hope this all comes out like in a 30 for 30 or something, just a tell-all of Phil Mickelson's life. Because, I mean, now that we're hearing all about this, the guy is rather interesting.
Yeah, well, it's part of the reason why people like love Phil, because he was like the everyman.
Right.
Right. Yeah, he's a golfer, but he's out there. He's a big sports gambler, and for a long time he was kind of like overweight, you know, and he had a good sense of humor, and he just seemed like a guy you would love to hang out with and have a beer. He maybe reminds you of yourself, just better on the golf course. Well, he likes betting on sports, and, you know, he'll have some alcohol, and he'll joke around and tell some funny jokes and everything and just seem like a down-to-earth guy. But, again, I go back to, right, you never know how much it truly runs deep, and we're getting all these stories about, you know, losing like $40 million. Goodness.
In a four-year span, $40 million.
At a certain point, jeez.
Yeah.
Call it quits.
When do the red alarm, the red alert go off in your mind?
Yeah, like, I'm just not good at this.
I lose $20 in a weekend. I don't bet the entire week. What are we even doing?
Well, that's the other problem, right? Then you start chasing, and that's probably the case for Phil. Oh, that's okay. I'll get it back on the next bet. And then it's like, oh, shoot, now I'm down 40 mil.
Those are the last words for every gambler. Yeah. I'll get it next time.
Yeah, that's right. Double or nothing. And then you keep doubling down until, you know, they take the house from you. So, anyways, if you're somebody that has some sort of struggle with that, there is a number. I don't have it off the top of my head, but
1-800-GAMBLER, I believe. That's the national line.
Easy enough.
Had to send that out to a couple of folks.
Oh, yeah? Well, Mickelson, if you're listening, and we know that you are, 1-800-GAMBLER. Help you out. But I love the story of 20 years ago, you know, getting scores sent to him on a pager and a beeper. I remember my father had a pager way back when, before people even had cell phones. What a world. When we come back, bad news for running backs like Christian McCaffrey and the Carolina Panthers in this case. The More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Great song. There are certain songs, I don't know if it's like a guilty pleasure or not. I don't know if I should be ashamed to say I love that song. But there are certain songs, mostly from like the 70s, that are a little disco-y that I do enjoy, such as that one. And that Ray Parker Jr. on the guitar on that, who of course then ripped off Huey Lewis for the Ghostbusters song. By the way, there was a new movie that came out that they used that song quite a bit in. It was a terrible movie. Ben Affleck's new movie, which I think went right to Hulu, and it was with his ex-girlfriend, Deep Water. Ah, terrible movie. I watched it a couple weeks ago when it first came out. I thought, this looks intriguing. It was awful, but it used that song, so that was the one good thing. Deep Water. That's one you can skip. I think it's on Hulu, Ben Affleck's new movie. And awkwardly, he was dating his co-star at the time. Now, obviously, he's with J-Lo again. But the other actress, who's a really good actress, Ana de Armas. They were dating at the time. They're in that movie. Terrible movie. Good song, though. Hey, bad news, I guess, for running backs like a Christian McCaffrey. We've heard rumors this offseason about the Panthers potentially trading Christian McCaffrey and the Bills being interested in. I imagine, you know, C-Mac will be on the roster week one. But I talk about this a lot. It's something I always talk about. Don't ever give the running back the second contract, and it never works out. And the one guy we thought maybe it would be worthwhile would be for Derrick Henry, and then, oddly enough, he broke down last year for the first time. And my concern would be kind of like LeBron James, albeit much younger, for Derrick Henry. Once it happens the first time, does that become the norm now? LeBron suffered his first injury, and now every year he's dealing with something for the Lakers. Because as you get older, we all go through it, as you get older, your body breaks down a little bit more, or your recovery's not as fast, or, you know, just things hurt easier. And when you're a running back, you speed up that clock. Even if you're in your 20s, as a running back, it's really like you're in your 30s, right? Like, add on a decade. A running back at 27 is like a regular athlete at 37, winding down your career because they take such a beating. And the leading running back, the leading rusher since 2014, so in the last 8 years, the leading rusher last 8 years have all been 25 years old or younger. So that's been that number. The best running backs in the league are 25 or younger. Once you pass 25, you're really on the downslope of your career, which is a sad notion for running backs. But that's just the reality. And it's why you should avoid that second contract. So now Christian McCaffrey is going to be turning 27. Unfortunately, he's obviously on the other side. He's only played 10 games the last 2 years. We've talked about it ad nauseum, but you know, he can't be relied upon. He's been breaking down. He's not as healthy. He gets injured more often. And he's also not that big of a running back, which is why we thought Derrick Henry could be the exception. Like, yeah, you probably shouldn't pay these guys a second contract, especially with how many carries they get. And Derrick Henry has gotten a lot of carries over his career. But the idea was, you know, he's so big and burly that he'll be able to handle it. He's been fine so far. And suddenly, he got injured last year. We'll see what happens to him in the future. But like, for example, Jonathan Taylor was the number one rusher this past year. He was only 22. Christian McCaffrey, when he led the league in 2019, was 23 years old. That's the age. Then you look at Ezekiel Elliott. How old would you guess Ezekiel Elliott is? Because he's only 26. Doesn't he seem like so old at the end of his career already? He's only been in the league like 5 years. He's 26 years old. And already it's like, oh yeah, Zeke, yeah, he's kind of washed up. He's on the downslope of his career. They're going to replace him with Tony Pollard. He's 26, but for a running back, you know, that's really old. Christian McCaffrey's 27. In the grand scheme of things, right, he's still incredibly young, and he's only been in the league for a few years. But he's been banged up the last 2 years. Who knows what you're going to get from him this year? He's 27, and you're thinking, oh, yeah, he's already kind of at the end of his line as a running back. Now, we've always known for running backs, the shelf life is much smaller. It's much shorter. But now we actually have, you know, some data to go along with it. The leading rusher last 8 years were all 25 or younger. So that really seems to be the mark. 25. Once you pass that 25 mark, you're no longer one of those elite running backs. And Ezekiel Elliott has already kind of fallen off a cliff. Christian McCaffrey, unfortunately. We'll see about Derrick Henry. But once you pass that 25, right, it's a real issue for these running backs. The best running backs are the ones, Jonathan Taylor comes in the league, hits right away. Right, Najee Harris looks impressive. Saquon Barkley, his best year was right very early on. Todd Gurley's another one who kind of announced his retirement this week, like a quasi-retirement announcement. He's 27. It seems like Todd Gurley's 37. His career quickly crumbled. Right, but it's Le'Veon Bell when he first comes in the league. Devontae Freeman when he first comes in the league. These are the guys leading the league in rushing. Then you hit 25, it's like, all right, it's been a career. That's why I always say, number one, don't waste a first-round pick. Number two, don't give a big second contract. And number three, what I would do to go along with the number 2 point, I would get a running back and unfortunately, it's the reality of the position. I would run them in the ground. And then when their contract's up after 4 years, potentially five, if there's that fifth-year player option, if they are a first-round pick, I would let them walk, and I'd do it all over again with a new guy. And I'm not investing in that second contract. And use them up as much as you can those 4 years you have them, and then start over again. Because once these running backs hit 25, they're no longer the same. So for Christian McCaffrey, coming off 2 years of injuries, now going to be 27, doesn't make you all that hopeful about what he could still do with Carolina. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Everybody wants your love. I just like to make you mine, all mine. Now, baby, give it up, give it up. Baby, give it up.
Wrapping up your Tuesday on the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We will eventually get you to Gamecock baseball coverage whenever it begins out there. Slated for 4 o'clock due to the weather, they have started back up in that first game, Alabama and Georgia, resuming in the third inning after the second rain delay. And we'll see if they're able to get through all the games today and what that SEC tournament will look like now moving forward because of weather on day one. I'm off to Greenville. I will not be on the air tomorrow, at least not in this capacity. But the Citadel will begin their conference tournament with the Southern Conference tomorrow. Now, because of weather up there, the Bulldogs are believed, I still haven't seen an official announcement, but The belief is that the Citadel will actually start things off tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And whenever they play, we'll have it for you. So whenever that South Carolina-Florida game begins and when the coverage begins, we'll have that for you right here on ESPN Radio. Clemson will be starting their conference tournament this evening, and the Citadel tomorrow up in Greenville. I don't know if they've made it official yet, but the idea was the Citadel would actually play at 9 a.m. tomorrow. If they lose, season over. If they win, they would then have to come back and play again in the afternoon. So stay tuned to any announcements online, social media, on the Citadel's website, even for South Carolina with their game. But the fact of the matter is, whenever the Gamecocks get off and rolling, you'll hear it right here. Clemson, we'll have that for you on our sister stations, and the Citadel as well, tomorrow, whenever they play. If it's 9 a.m. or anything later, we'll have that as well. We'll be back on the air with the Morrow Midday Show on Thursday. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again Thursday at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.